Mr. Lingard, Real 3, who were talking about your time at HMS Victory Barracks, Portsmouth, round about October-ish, 1940, September, October. You were confined to barracks. What did that involve? What was it like? How bad was it?
It wasn't all that bad, really. You weren't allowed out. It was combining all sorts of dirty, filthy jobs, cleaning toilets, sweeping up. Wasn't allowed out. And, of course, in Pompey Barracks, you had to double everywhere you went. You never walked. And whatever you was carrying, you had to double with it everywhere you went in the barracks there. And I didn't enjoy that one little bit, 7 days, for just loosening a rem out there. And I wouldn't mind if I got something in return, but I didn't. And I got 7 days confined to camp. But the 7 days soon passed, you know. You made friends with people who were in Chokey for much longer than that, you know. Some had got 3 months, some had got, you know, much more harsher sentences than I got. I was only in there, you know, for 7 days.
Were it bad influence?
No. It was just the luck of the draw as far as I was concerned, you know.
Now, you mentioned the drafting office.
Yes, the drafting officer. It's a tannoy for your draft. It's a ring out your name and your rank and a number, report to the drafting office, and when they rang this out over the tannoy, he went down a little tiny office on the corner near the guard room, and they always seemed to be what they, you know, the barrack stanchions in there, old timers. And they always seemed to sort out the jobs which you didn't want. And they said, okay, you're going on a course. And I thought, oh, well, yeah, what's this now? And so you're going on a gunnery course. I thought, oh, great, at last, you know, after all these months. Where am I going? HMS Excellent. I thought, a ship. And they said, no, it's a shore base. I said, where's that? And they said, it's not far, send just up the road. I'll take up there in a lorry. There's about six of you going. And I said, oh, all right then, yeah. So we mustered at a certain time in the morning, with all our kit and everything. Hammock, your little brown suitcase and your kit bag. And they gathered up, I think there must have been about 20 in the finish, I think, all gathered together. And we was off to this HMS Excellent. And somebody said, oh, it's Whale Island. And I said, Whale Island? And I said, yeah, it's a gunnery school. I thought, oh, well, that sounds all right, you know, that's what we want to be. So I went to this Whale Island, HMS Excellent.
And this will be when, October or November?
This will be November-ish,
1940.
Mm-hmm. So I went to Whale Island. I never had such a shock in my life when I stepped out the back of that pickup. I never met so much discipline in all my life. You could only breathe if you got permission. God dear, talk about discipline. And I found out this was not only the ordinary recruits who were there, the officers were treated exactly the same. And that was the only consolation you got. The officers who were on training, they didn't wear collar and tie, they wore white mufflers. They were trainees, gunnery officers, and they got exactly the same treatment as the recruits. Where the POs and the chief petty officers, who was the instructors, they were the devil themselves. They were, whatever you did, you done it at the double. If you was having the P, you had to do it at the double. Everything was on the double. This included the officers as well, because when you picked all your kit up, you had to double to the barracks, and the officers had to do the same, and we thought that was great. The officers had to double everywhere, we had to double everywhere, so that wasn't too bad, that wasn't. And we found, of course, when we reported the various divisions, I was picked out to be an AA gunner, anti-aircraft gunner, and I thought, that's better, that sounds all right. And then we went to the usual training schools, classes at Whale Island, different instructors.
This was actually the gunnery school, wasn't it?
The gunnery school, yeah. And some were, you know, on the bigger guns, the QRs, and the layers went on bigger guns. As it happened, as that chose me to be an AA gunner, anti-aircraft, I thought, well, that's great, I'll be on small guns. The biggest guns we ever used were about 3-inch or 3-inch or, you know, pom-poms and that sort of thing.
So how did this is your first experience of gunnery, really. How did this start you off?
Well, it started off in the first place when we picked up at the gunnery school. Then we were given strong lectures about this and how serious it is being a gunner. You know.
What sort of lectures? What did they say?
There was lectures on the types of ammunition we would be handling, you know, and you can't just treat it willy-nilly. Even if you was on guns and a shell misfires. We'll say for instance a 3 or a 0.45 shell misfires. It's got to come out of the breech. And the breech loader has to catch it when it comes out. Not only does he have to catch it, he has to read whether it's been struck on the bottom or not. You know, whether it's been struck in the centre, right side, left side. And immediately report that you get rid of it over the side before it does go off. And I didn't realise all this happens, you know. I thought if it misfires, it just comes out and it's chucked away. It isn't. You have to read where the striker hit it on the bottom. And I thought, bloody hell, you know. I wonder if any ever go off when they come out. And of course the instructors say, it has happened, it has happened. They've opened the breech and it's exploded. And this is, you know, if there's no mark on it, then the striker pin must be broken or misadjusted, you see. If it's struck on the right-hand side of the cap, then it's offset, you know, and all that sort of thing. And you went through all these instructions, and they went on, and then you started off on the small guns, which was the 303s, how to strip them down.
Well, the rifle.
The rifles, 303 rifles. And then from that you went on to Sten guns. And then the classy one was the Stenson. That was the one with the chrome, with the wooden butt on it, like a Stenson, but with a wooden butt on it. And you went on to those, learned how to strip those, and then you graduated up then to pom-poms, Oerlikons, 20mm, and off to Oerlikons. In the classroom, you learnt all about the types of shells and what you must avoid doing and what you must do, and you mustn't stand them on their ends, you know, in case you stand on something a bit sharp. But the parades in between that were discipline parades.
Tell me about the guns. What about the pom-pom? Can you describe? Was that pom-pom would be a good one to start with? What was a pom-pom? What was a gun crew? What was a gun drill?
Well, you were picked out on the gun crews for various jobs. You were taught all the jobs on whether it was an Oerlikon, a loader, or a gunner yourself. In between the straps on the Oerlikons. There was two of you on
there. The Oerlikon was that the one you spent most time on? Well, describe that. Stick to that one.
Well, that was the one where you put your shoulders in the arms of it, you know, and it's loaded with like a bucket on the top of the 20mm shells in. And there was two of you on that, one to load and one to shoot. And you took it in turns, whichever which was which, you see. And also you had misfires on that, which, if you did have a misfire, you had to get it out of the breech. And you didn't read it. When you go out the beach, you give it to the loader. He's, you know, he's standing with empty hands, and he would read out what it was, whether it was struck or not, and get rid of it. But on the pom-poms, there was one, two, three. There was about four, five on that. Now,
sticking to the other. So, how did you actually fire? You had this shoulder. Tell us how you actually fired it.
The shoulder arm. Well, you had the usual sights on the fore and aft sights on the barrel, and you were strapped into a harness there, which tucked under your shoulders, looked through the harness, and it was a sort of twist grip firing.
Like a motorcycle,
twist grip firing. And as the shells went out, I must say that I didn't know until then that some of the shells, I thought the shells when they went out, they were all the same, but they weren't. Because when they were loaded, there was a star shell in between the two. And a sentry one that lit up. As it goes through the sky, it's red. But in between that, there was
a tracer.
A tracer was every third one. Every third one was a tracer, and the rest were just proper shells, you know. And I didn't know that until I went on to load in the magazines. And every third one was a tracer.
But was it difficult to control the fire, you know?
No. It's quite easy to control it. There was all on bearings. The guns were all on. They weren't hard to handle. As a matter of fact, if he was out the harness and there's a strong wind, it used to blow him round, you know. But there was also the safety cradles on the, you know, which you can't. The safety cradle was a bar that went round, which when you come in line of the bridge, you know, you couldn't shoot anybody on the bridge because of the cradles round it, you see, all those. There was all those on it. And you had to learn how to use this, you know. You couldn't just be shooting someone and come round, you know, bung it. Also on top of that, the training school, that's used to go into the dome. You've probably heard about it.
Tell me about the dome.
And that when you went into the
simulator, isn't it?
It's a simulator, yeah, in the dome. It was a big dome roof, and it was lit up at night. You'd see the stars in the sky and the moon and all that. And they used to put aircraft going across it on wires. And you used to have a dummy Oerlikon gun, you see, and you used to fire at it. It used to work electronically, I believe, because nothing came out of the gun, but as you went across, you could see the dots lining up on the dome, and that was a ray between the gun and the little stars, whatever they were up there, you see. You used to try and you used to have that about once every two or three days, you know, in the dome there, with these, like a toy it was, really.
That was the Oerlikon. Yeah, that was an Oerlikon,
yeah. And that was, you know, it was interesting and good fun.
Well, you'd learn to shoot ahead.
Always shoot ahead of everything, yeah. Always shoot ahead of everything. And they used to say, in your mind, you have to estimate the speed of it, you know. And it was impossible, that was, to for a young lad, to estimate the speed of an aircraft and the speed of the trajectory going out there, you know. But you got to learn that, you know, if you kept it in front, you weren't too bad. The instructors wouldn't shout at you. But if you was firing behind the aircraft, that was a different thing. And aircraft recognition, I was terrible at that.
Now, what was your problem with that?
To me, that was all aeroplanes. When there was bombers, fighters, I hadn't got a clue. But you used to have silhouettes of them, you know, on the ceiling, just silhouettes of these on this dome. And they were all black. They had no markings on at all. And I'd say, what's that? And I'd say, how the hell do I know? It's an aeroplane. I hadn't got a clue what they were. And they used to give you books on all this. And books, coloured books, all with, you know, some were black and white, some were in colour, of the different types of Japanese aircraft, American aircraft, English aircraft, French aircraft. And it was most confusing to me. They all looked the same to me. The only thing I recognised were the engines. They'd either got two engines, one engine, or four. And the big ones had got eight, the big bombers. But aircraft recognition was terrible for me. I couldn't do anything. When we come to have the test, you know, I was a right failure at that. The instructor used to say, if there's any aircraft about, ask somebody else if it's one of ours, will you? Don't bloody shoot at it, you know. Terrible, terrible at aircraft recognition. But the instructors were good, I must say that. Of course, it was their job. They were used to it. But
Were they sympathetic, or were they a very hard disciplinarian in that manner?
No, it was a very hard disciplinarian. Yeah, very hard at it. But the training at HMS Excellence, I went on an assault course there, and their assault courses were tough. By God, they were tough.
Well, wait, why was it worse?
Well, they used to get in the rooms that was in, they used to call you out and in the middle of the night, you know, on the assault course, 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, with all your kit. And that was hell. It used to be bucketing down with rain, and he was out there getting wringing wet. It was a tough course, that was. I don't say I enjoyed it, I didn't.
What about you, any other guns? What about the pom-pom or the Bofors?
The Bofors, yeah. Well, at the training school then, they only had Sindel and double barrel, but twin Bofors at the training school. But later on, as the years went on, they had four-barreled ones, you know. But we only had Sindel and the crews on that. When I was training on that, you change sections every so often. If you was a loader or a fire or whatever position you do, you changed over. When the instructor shouted, you changed over jobs.
What were the jobs of the Bofors then?
Oh, God. I can't even remember them. There was a layer. I can't remember what they all were now, all the jobs.
What did you think of it? I presume you didn't use that as much as the Oerlikon. Oh,
no.
Later on,
no.
What
no.
did you think of it compared to the Oerlikon?
It was very efficient for what it was done. Yeah, it was supposed to. It was all right. It was quite a good gun. I like the Oerlikons were much lighter. I was only a small chap, you say. I was only 5'4". And I was only a small chap. I like the smaller guns.
What about the pom-pom? What did you think of them?
They were all right. You know, they were quite efficient for what they do. They're bloody noisy, mind you. But the twin Oerlikons that we had, that was all right. Yeah. The hardest part of the gunnery course was when you was called out in the middle of the night. As you probably know, the tide goes in and out at Whale Island, and at certain times you can walk across to Whale Island, and at certain times you can't. It's about 4 foot deep. And they used to get you out in the middle of the night, and they used to put on an assault course, and they had a little row of boats. And you had a number to get in one of those boats, number 6 or 7 or 9. And you used to jump in this boat with all your kit, and your rifle, chuck it all in this boat, and you had to row to the island on the other side. But they didn't tell you there's no bloody plug in the boat, did they? And by the time you got halfway there, you found out you was up to your knees in water, and it gradually sunk.
So what was the point of that? Why did they do that to you?
It sunk, and your job was to get your kit on that island and back again and bring the boat back. And that was murder. It toughened you up, because by the time you got back, you was wringing wet, your kit was wringing wet, your rifle was wringing wet, and you had to pull the bloody boat back. Of course, it was under the water by then, and the rope was there to pull it back, but once you got it moving, it was pretty easy to move across the sand and pull it up. Of course, the instructors used to kill themselves a laughing, you know. And they say you should always check it when jumping, always make sure that the bung is in the bottom. Always make sure. I don't think anybody ever looked. I think the whole lot that went out, everyone sunk. Nobody ever bothered to check if there was a bung. And the bung was there. It was on a piece of cord. But nobody ever checked it. They always do it. And the assault courses were tough there. You were like Tarzan in the trees there, you know, swinging about between poles with ropes.
So how long did this course last? You went there in about November.
It lasted 3 months. About 3 months, that course did.
And so that would take you through to about February, would it?
February, yeah.
1941.
Yeah, about that.
And was there any passing out or testing of it?
Oh, yes, you had the usual courses to go through, testing. So, as I say, aircraft recognition, complete failure on that. Didn't know what I was doing. But as the drill and the rifle and the drill and the Oerlikons and the Bofors, absolutely marvellous. All went down well. And fainting on the parade ground went down very well.
You fainted?
I fainted, yes, on the parade ground.
What was that?
Well, mainly because I dropped my rifle, which was very naughty. I dropped my rifle, and the instructor come up and put his face about 2 inches from mine, and he says, go over to the drill shed and pick up a 4-inch shell and run round the, double round the parade ground. It's a big parade ground, so I picked up a shell. The rifle was still on the floor. Picked up the shell, went round the parade ground, and very craftily, when I passed behind the drill sheds where he couldn't see me, I walked. And I didn't know that he times it. So when I got back to him, he said, you stopped behind number one shed and walked, didn't you? And I said, yes. Round again. 3 times I went round the parade ground with that bloody shell. And then I put it down in the drill shed, and I went back, stood by my rifle, and he says, pick it up, and I bent down and fainted. And when I woke up, they were all marching over me. Me and the rifle still flaked out on the floor, and the parade still going on, they're just stepping over me.
And was that the actual passing out parade?
No, that was before the passing out parade.
You did pass the course?
Oh, yeah, passed the course, yeah, passed it with flying colours.
So you qualified as what?
As an AA2.
Anti-aircraft gunner too.
Yeah.
And what happened then?
And then I was posted back to HMS Victory, Pompey Barracks.
And how were you there? You got back there right about February 41.
Yeah. I was in barrack for ages. And then they sent me there to a place which I'd never heard of before. I don't suppose you've heard of it either. It was called Belmont One, and it wasn't very far out of, I think it was a rest camp. There was two, there was Belmont One and Belmont Two. One was for seamen and one was for engine room staff, you know, stokers and that. And I got sent there. And I was lost for several months because I was in the stokers camp. And I worked in the victualling office there for, ages.
What were you doing in there?
Just as stokers were coming out, I was issuing the hut they were supposed to go to, the hut they were supposed to, booking them in, giving them station cards, and recording their official numbers. And I was just working in the office there.
So, admin duties?
Admin duties. And I found out, after months being, I don't know how long I was in there, probably got it on a record somewhere. I was in there ages, and then I found out I shouldn't have been in that camp at all. I should have been in the other one. And it's mainly because there was two Lingards that came to that camp at the same time. One was a seaman and one was a stoker. And they sent the stoker to the seaman's camp and they sent me to the stoker's place. And we got mixed up, and it wasn't until months after that they found out we was mixed, so we changed over. We changed over then. And I stayed there in the new. Oh, what was that? Oh, I was on the telephone in the Belmont one. I stayed on the telephone for a little while. And then I got.
What were you doing there, too?
Just answering, you know, silly questions, really. Being put through the various offices and messes. I had a list there who to plug them into.
So it was a switchboard?
A switchboard job, yeah. And then I was posted back to Victory again. Went back into barracks. Picked up my old job there, motorcycle riding for a little while. Auxiliary. Great. And then I went on dockyard duties.
And what did that involve?
God dear, dockyard duties. We was on a little tiny boat, a little tiny. It was fired by coal, and there was only the chief of it. Was a chief three badger. He was the skipper, a petty officer, and three seamen and one stoker. I think it was about four in the crew, and we used to go out and patrol the harbour and come back. Never slept on there, slept in the barracks. Every morning we used to go down and pick the victuals up from the victualling office in the dockyard in a big tray. And it was the first time in my life when I joined that little flotilla. The petty officer came to me and he says, OK, he says, you're cook of the day. And I says, oh, great, what does that mean? He's a chitty, he says, there's a tray, go to the victualling office and get the victuals for the day. So I went up there with this, like, baker's tray and got a loaf of bread, some margarine, some tins of bacon, some tin pudding, some tea and some coffee, and came back with it. And I put it down in the little tiny mess deck, and he said, OK, you cook of the day, start doing dinner. I'd never cooked an egg in my life. And that was how I started to learn to cook. I'd never cooked a meal in my life. And it was like, and it stunk of oil and dirt and cold. It, terrible it was. I hated that. We had to go in dungarees anyway, weren't dressed up. And I was on that for some time. We seemed to change over crews occasionally, I don't know why. We were on a patrol around the harbour, I don't know what we were looking for. I think we were looking for debris of any sort or mines or whatever. But we only used to patrol the harbour and come back in.
Just Portsmouth Harbour?
Yeah, that's all it was, just round the harbour and back in again. Nobody seemed to know, even the bloke who took us out, the skipper, the three badger who took us out, he seemed to know what he was doing, nobody else did. And I was on that for months, going back and forwards. But I must tell you, other things happened to me, because as I say, I was well known with a lot of cockneys. And there was one I was very friendly with in the barracks, him and I were great chaps. And he said we could do some extra money, so he took me on a burglary trip, you know. And he says, we used to go down through the dockyards, past it. Now, at this particular time, lots of trucks in there, you see, and he used to get these trucks and open the sliding doors, you know. And we found some nurses' uniforms in there. And he said, oh, we sell these on the market, you know. And he got these, took them all back to the barracks and took the little red crosses off the sleeves and picked all those. He used to sell them in the pubs. And he was a Londoner. And he was he was the biggest thief I ever met in my life. He was a lovely chap, well spoken.
And you went with him on this?
Yeah. Yeah, we used to make quite a few points in the pubs we had. Oh, and then I'll tell you what else, he come in one day, I don't know where he'd gone from, off one of the railway trucks. He come in there with some silk parachutes. I think they were silk, they may have been nylon, I don't know. But he come in those. And he's cutting them up into squares. And he was flogging those around Pompey Market and in the pubs, yeah. He was a great character. I went on leave with him once in London. What a character he was. And he was a bright spark. But he was a nice, clean, very smart looking. But he was the biggest crook I ever knew. But he was a typical Cockney lad.
Great character. Obviously leading you down the
path
a bit.
He did, yeah. Great character. I often wonder what happened to him.
He didn't get caught anyway.
Never got caught at all. But he got the cheek of the devil he had. He used to walk around with parcels and stuff and nobody ever stopped him. If it had been me, I'd have been stopped, nothing. Yeah, great character. Great character. But he made a few bum, I tell you. We were never short of money with him, Bill. Never. Great character.
So, anything else about your time back at Victory, well, Portsmouth? You seem to have been there quite a while.
Oh, yeah. I used to get lost in that place, you know. People used to mislay my name somewhere. And Well, you can tell how bad it was there. There up until I went to one or two other camps. I went to a marine camp once for a short while. I don't know why they sent some of us there to And it was only on a training course or something. That was with to do with guns, with some Marines. But we only went every day. We seemed to get lost amongst the crowd. Several of us did. Never been sent to a ship.
Did you want to get sent to a ship? I mean, you know, what did you...
Yeah, well, we did want to, but you didn't volunteer for these sort of things because nobody wanted to end up on a bloody great battleship.
Why not?
It's too much discipline. We didn't want discipline like that. Wanted something nice and easy. And then I got, eventually I got posted to the Ulster Monarch.
Now, when would that be?
Oh, that was later on, that was much later. Now, let's have a think now. About 1942.
Whereabouts in 42?
That was late 42. It'd be somewhere around about September, I think.
So you'd been there a year and a half?
Yes, yeah, on these little ships around the harbour.